Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Alyssa Watson.
And I'm Dr. Beth Mollison.
Thank you for joining us in the veterinary break room. In the break room, Dr. Beth and I sit down and we have kind of casual conversations about topics of interest to us in veterinary medicine. And today we're going to be talking about aquamation, which is an alternative to traditional flame-based cremation. This kind of came up because a lot of you know I work part-time in the in-home hospice and euthanasia sector, and this is something that a lot of mobile, you know, end-of-life care practitioners know a lot about, and there's Facebook groups, and we talk about it all the time, but I didn't quite realize that it wasn't as well-known outside of that little kind of niche in veterinary medicine. Dr. Beth, before I asked you about aquamation, did you know what it was?
No, and I was going to say, I can't guarantee that it's not well-known outside of your group, Alyssa. It's just not well-known by me. So I could be living under a rock, or perhaps it has not gotten as mainstream as you thought. No, when you said, do you want to talk about aquamation? I said, what is that? So no, to me, it sounds more like animation than cremation, but regardless, I'm starting to learn a little bit more about it, but have mostly reserved this discussion for you to teach me. So yeah, well, do you mind to intro us to that for anybody else like me living under that rock?
Yeah, I will do my best to teach you. I certainly am not an expert at something, like I said, that I've kind of, you know, picked up little things on, especially with several of my groups. Basically, aquamation, like I said in the intro, it's an alternative to flame-based cremation. It's also called alkaline hydrolysis. And one of the things that I think is so wonderful about it is that it truly seems to be a greener alternative to traditional cremation. So we'll talk a little bit about why it's more eco-friendly and things like that. But it is, you know, approved for pets. It's legal in all 50 states and across most of Canada, from what I understand. Outside of that, I'm unsure as to, you know, where else in the world it's being used.
And is it being used commonly in people right now? Where are we with humans?
Yeah, so that's another thing. Certainly, yes, this is an option for people, you know, for their body care as well. I think that, you know, it got some press when Desmond Tutu elected to have his aftercare that way. That was a few years ago. And then that kind of died down a little bit, my understanding. But people actually, Las Vegas, we have a facility for aquamation here in Las Vegas. Just the one that I'm aware of. I don't know about other places. Do you know if you have one?
I think you know the answer to that, Alyssa. I don't. I need to Google, catch myself up. Because it does sound really interesting to me. So I know you mentioned this sort of environmentally friendly aspect. Is that what the driver here is, and why is it? What makes it more environmentally friendly exactly? Can you describe that process to us?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, for me, I think the environmentally friendly and smaller carbon footprint is one of the things that really piqued my interest about it. I think there's lots of reasons people choose this or would want to choose this for their pets or for them, you know, themselves. And so we'll talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit first. So, you know, unlike flame cremation, the aquamation machine itself runs on electricity. So we're not using any fossil fuels. We're not releasing any, you know, gases into the environment. The overall carbon footprint is, there's a couple places that I checked and the estimations were, you know, quite varied. One said estimated to be about a quarter of flame-based cremation. Another source I looked at said a tenth of flame-based cremation. So that's a pretty big difference. But I think we can all certainly be assured that the carbon footprint is a lot smaller than flame-based cremation. And then for how it works, because that's another question that a lot of people have. So it's like basically kind of just mimics natural decomposition that would happen in the environment, but like on fast forward, you know, it speeds that process up, and it does that using heat, not as much heat as mm-hmm. obviously flame cremation, but there is heat as well as flowing water, and then that alkaline solution, which is usually achieved with like a potassium hydroxide or a sodium hydroxide added to the water. So,
and this is happening in like a chamber of some sort.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's happening in a chamber.
And okay, from going back to the pet perspective, if you did have your pet aquamated, am I using the right term there? Okay, your pet's been aquamated. What are you getting back? Is it looking like cremation ashes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question too. So the whole process, you know, generally takes less than a day, you know, 18 to 20, 22 hours, you know, depending on the capacity of your machine, the tank. And yeah, what's left behind, very, very similar to traditional flame-based cremation. So after aquamation, there are some bone fragments, fragile bone fragments. Then those need to dry because obviously we've used water in this process. So those then are set out to dry for, you know, a day or so. And then those are ground into a powder that is, you know, like the ashes. And I think certainly for me, for a long time, I assumed that the ashes in regular cremation were like the ashes in your fireplace, but that's not really the case either. Like after flame cremation, there are bone fragments and things left over, and then those are placed into a machine, and that machine's called a cremulator, and it grinds it all up, and you know, that's the ashes that you get back. Mm-hmm. And so the same thing is done here. They take those bone fragments and grind them, and you get a powder that's similar. I haven't personally seen it, you know, from what I've read, like there's a different, slightly different, you know, consistency and color, but other than that, it's pretty similar.
Yeah. I didn't know there was a step two to the whole cremation process. I guess I'm recognizing that maybe I haven't spent a lot of time envisioning what happens, for better or worse, maybe as a self-protective mechanism, because I could see where maybe this is more appealing to people. Whereas if you do stop and think about like what cremation is and the visuals that go along with the flame, you know, the flame part of it, I could see where maybe the aquamation does have an appeal to people who don't like the idea of their pet being cremated, or themselves being cremated for that matter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people do find, once they understand the process, do find that it seems gentler, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody has personal preferences. I think one of the big things is to be able to talk, you know, confidently and compassionately and know, you know, what actually happens. And I always adjust when I'm talking to families about anything, about the euthanasia process, about the medications, about the aftercare, you know, just kind of adjust to the information that they want, because some people want lots of information and other people don't, and that's okay, you know.
Get the fast results your canine patients deserve. Think fast. Think Apoquel, Oclacitinib tablet for allergic itch relief starting in as little as 4 hours. Visit Apoquel.com for full prescribing information and to learn more. May cause worsening of existing parasitic skin infestations, serious infections, or pre-existing cancers. New neoplasias have been observed. Do not use in dogs under 12 months of age with serious infections or in breeding, pregnant, or lactating dogs. Think fast. Think Apoquel.
The other thing that's produced, you know, when you have this aquamation, you know, the body decomposes and is reduced to these bone fragments, but then you also have this, you know, this effluent, it's like a liquid that's left over afterwards, and it's sterile. It's actually really nutrient rich. Apparently it can be used like as a fertilizer, but it's also safe. It's safe to like just go down the drain, mm-hmm. You know, which is another reason that this is billed as so eco-friendly, mm-hmm. you know, it's just some degraded peptides and sugars and things like that. And also things like pacemakers or other medical devices that need to be removed prior to flame cremation because, mm-hmm. you know, they have a battery or there's some risk that they're going to explode. Because the heat is so much lower with aquamation, mm-hmm. you don't need to do that. And those devices can be recovered and even can be recycled. So that was cool too.
Yeah, I would say that's really interesting. The liquid part gives me a little bit of the ick, maybe for no good reason. I mean, it makes sense, but something mm-hmm. about there being a liquid at the end makes me feel a little weird.
But yeah, that's okay. Yeah,
I'd say like no matter the process, there's always a, yeah, none of it's super pleasant to think about. But this is, yeah, it's a really interesting way, of course, as we talk more and more about how we can be environmentally friendly and decrease mm-hmm. our emissions and things like that. I think this is a really interesting topic for us to learn more about. Do we know what sort of the experts say? Do they feel like this is going to replace cremation one day, or no? Do we know any opinions?
I didn't see anything that looked like that. You know, I'm certain that as it becomes, you know, more well known and more available and more, you know, looking at cost, I mean, certainly these machines are a major investment. So the mm-hmm. machine itself, there's a few, not very many, you know, companies producing the machines, but, you know, and they range in size, because you can do all the way down from like, you know, just single pets all the way up mm-hmm. to ones that are able to do kind of, you know, a more communal type of aquamation, sure. like you'd do a communal cremation. And the equine industry is apparently one place where this is really growing as well, which I hadn't, you know, hadn't realized. So depending on the size of your machine and the size of the body that you're processing, the capacity, the cost of these machines, I read, can range anywhere from like $50,000 to, you know, $200,000 just for the machine.
Sure.
And then you need, you know, the salts and everything to go with it, you know, to operate that. But generally, people are charging pretty similar prices, you know, to clients as you would for flame-based cremation.
That's what I was going to ask. Of course, that's always a big, big factor when we talk about mm-hmm. Veterinary care in any capacity. So, well, this is interesting, mm-hmm. Alyssa. I've certainly learned a lot, as yeah. you know.
The other thing that I did was very important to me when I learned about it was, you know, I talked about how devices like pacemakers and stuff are safe, but also medications. So like mm-hmm. chemotherapeutic medications, you know, euthanasia solution, huge mm-hmm. deal. You know, is this going to be broken down and safe? And it is, and it's a much safer alternative than even burial. We know, you know, Clinician's Brief has a couple articles out there about the potential risks of, you know, burial and environmental contamination and secondary poisoning, you know, when animals are euthanized with sodium pentobarbital. So that was another really important thing.
Really interesting. Well, we appreciate you bringing this topic to our attention, especially those of us that were out of the loop. So I think that brings us to win of the week. Alyssa, how's your week yeah. going? Any wins this week?
Yes. Yes. So I was in clinic the other day. I haven't been in clinic in a while. And the, you know, the clinics that I sometimes relieve for needed some help. And I had a rare break in my schedule that lined up and I was able to help, which made me feel really good. And, but I actually did 2 days in clinic in a row, a Friday and a Saturday. And of course they were like crazy, but I survived them and I reminded myself that, yep, I can still do this. And so that felt pretty good.
Nice to get back on that horse and feel like you haven't skipped a beat. That's good.
How about you? Do you have anything?
I'm going to keep mine on topic with the theme of death. And that is that I've narrowly escaped death since I saw you last, Alyssa. I'm laughing at your face. I was bucked off a horse this week. I went riding, just trail riding. I'm not like, mm-hmm. I like riding, but I'm not like a horse girly. Mm-hmm. You know, I rode growing up and things like that, but mm-hmm. certainly not an expert, but not a novice. So I was just doing this very pleasant trail ride, you know, where you go for an hour and you
yep.
your horse walks at like 1 mile an hour and you're holding the reins, but really you don't have much power.
But really, because the horse knows where it's going and comes right back. The horse knows
where it's going. So like, you're not, you know, it's for beginners, but that's fine. It was lovely until out of nowhere, my horse just started bucking like multiple back and forth and up and down until I finally had no choice but to let go of the reins, flew off the horse. I did like a duck and roll away because my immediate thought was I'm going to get trampled. You know, I'm not that far off the ground, but I'm going to get trampled. I did not. Spoiler, I'm still here. I walked away without a single bruise. So I'm going to count that as my huge win of the week. But it was really, really traumatizing. It made me, you know what, we were riding with somebody's mom who was, of course, older than us. And I'm just thinking about, you know, this is a horse I would have put my 6-year-old on. Right. So it really gave me an interesting perspective. I mean, this is a big dub. We all know that horses are giant creatures and have the potential to be dangerous, but it was very eye-opening for me. Yeah. Powerful. But regardless, I have to chalk it up as a win because I'm not kidding. I had zero bruises, wasn't sore, was perfectly fine. I still don't know what made the horse do it. I don't know, fly bite. So I was fine. Of course, the next day I tripped going down my stairs and do have an injury from that. But anyway, that's my big win. I'm happy to be here is what I'm trying to say.
I'm very happy that you're here and I'm glad you didn't get hurt at all, because that can be really scary. So
thank you. I was wearing my helmet, a PSA for helmets.
Perfect. Yes. Everybody needs to wear their helmet when riding, always. Mm-hmm. So, well, thanks everybody for joining us. I hope you enjoyed this little talk. And if there's ever anything you guys are interested in learning about, drop us a line and we'll talk about it. Thanks for joining us in the Veterinary Break Room. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, including a video version on YouTube. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review us. You can also listen to or watch our podcast episodes on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. Or drop us a line at podcasts@instinct.vet. Veterinary Break Room is an Instinct Science production produced by Alexis Ussery and co-hosted by Alyssa Watson, Beth Mollison, and Katie Berlin.